Welcome back, everybody, to the sixth round post-fight show with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Eddie Mercado.
You watched that card sober?
Dude, you know what? I'm raw dogging it.
I'll say. Nah, I watched it sober, too.
We're coming to y'all just straight from the end of this week's UFC event going down at the Apex facility in Las Vegas, Nevada. And man, if ever an Apex card was an Apex card, this shit was an Apex card. Hey, credits to Perez and Gushkov. They knew how to close the show on a high note, but every single other step of the way, this was just a hard night.
And even the Gushkov fight, Ryan Spann was doing his best to make it a slog.
Yeah.
Riddled with ball shots and make it not fun. But, you know.
Hey, we got a little something out of it.
Yeah. Anthony Smith showed up.
Yeah, I was just saying to myself, I was like, man, apparently looking like Anthony Smith is enough to beat Ryan Spann.
Yeah, it's like, you know how the old saying, like, fuck you and anyone that looks like you.
Yeah.
Well, this is why.
It's also, I mean, we say it all the time that styles make fights. It's just, it's also like physical style, you know, actual, how, you know, facets of your face and cranium make fights.
It must be.
Guys that look like Anthony Smith just beat Ryan Spann. That's all there is to it. That is the style it takes to... whoever's fighting Ryan Spann next, I don't care who you are, I don't care what training you do, what it is, go out, shave your head, bleach your skin, and, you know, try and make your head as round as possible.
Yeah, we got to get him in there with like Volkan Ozdemir or something.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean, we're gonna have to see this one through.
See how far you can get in the iteration of what does it take? How far away from Anthony Smith can you be and still?
Removed.
Yeah.
We'll just keep getting them bald white dudes to fight.
Yeah. Throw a lightweight in there. See, sure. Like, you know, shave Drew Dober.
We'll start shrinking in size, too.
Yeah. Shave Drew Dober's head. See what happens, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, let's talk about this main event. Alex Perez putting it on Matthews Nicolau. And, you know, I liked the way this fight looked when it was booked. It's always good to get a aggressive pressure fighter against a counter fighter. That's a good matchup. You know that both men are going to get to do the thing they want to do. So they're going to mix it up in a way that's entertaining. And, credit to Perez for just making sure that Nicolau didn't have room to time him and room to get reads and to crack him coming in, because Perez was going to have to come forward to win this fight, and he made sure to step on the gas and to not let Nicolau have the room to breathe, to really hit him with one clean shot at a time coming in.
Yeah, no, I picked Perez here. I was one of very few people, so I'm going to gloat a little bit on that. But my problem with Nicolau, like, I appreciate his technical prowess, his gusto, the way he plays the game out there. Uh-huh. But I feel like anytime he's playing that, like, edging on people, it's when he's afraid, when he's getting when he's feeling the heat, so to speak, when he feels the power. And I couldn't trust that he was going to be able to stand up to the power that Perez was bringing. And before the Brandon Royval fight, I might have had a different thought.
Sure.
Watching him get slept and then come fight someone who hits just as hard, if not harder, I just didn't trust him.
Yeah, my problem was the range. Like, Royval is a tricky task because he's such a tall, lanky flyweight who's such a leaf blower with all that offense he puts out there. And Perez is not that. He's a little short bull. So I really figured he would have to have, he would have a lot more trouble trying to get through that middle distance to where Nicolau could be cracked. And then Nicolau would be able to hit him hard coming in. But hey, he just, he bowled through. So, you know.
Yeah, and he needed it too, because he hasn't won since 2020.
No, yeah. This was a badly needed win for Perez, who was starting to hit that Uncle Creepy territory.
Oof, right.
Where it's just like, you not only are you not winning anymore, but you're not even being able to get to fights anymore at all. It just feels like somehow your MMA career is stalling by like the wrath of God, you know?
Should I put him on my USADA list?
No. I do not advocate any keeping of USADA lists. If you're going to start a USADA list, just take and copy the whole UFC roster, put them on it, and then you can figure out when you think it's safe to take a fighter off your USADA list. Sure. That is the better way to play.
Proven innocent.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not a bad idea.
That, if you're gonna play that, if you're gonna play with the whole like, oh, everybody's I think this guy's cheating thing, then just assume it's everybody, you know.
Well, Zane, just between the deuce of us, every time I've done that so far, it's been right. I'm just saying, no one picked Weidman except for me. No one picked Perez except for me.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough.
I'm not saying that's why it happened.
But you are saying that that's you're saying that you might just wear a t-shirt that says that's why it happened.
And then like, I ain't saying, but I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. So, hey, great win to get Perez out of his slump for Nicolau. It really just, unfortunately, I mean, it sucks because he went on this big, you know, 6-fight winning streak where he was trying to make himself into a dark horse contender. And now with these back-to-back losses, it just kind of feels like you're never going to fight for that title.
Or at least not anytime soon. I feel like the division is so shallow that it's not outside the realm of possibility. But like, the thing for me is, you know, he put up this impressive record, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need a good chin at flyweight. You just don't. It's not about that. Heavyweight, absolutely. Heavyweight, sure. Flyweight
It's the division where you need scrambling. Scrambling is your primary flyweight skill set. Cardio and scrambling.
Unlimited gas tank. So you can get by, you know, without risking getting knocked out with everybody you face, because everyone you face isn't built like that. Everyone doesn't have that one hitter quitter, you know. But when you start facing the guys at the top who do, you're in big trouble.
Yep.
You're in big trouble. And I think a lot of people were sleeping on Perez because he hasn't won forever, right? Nearly half a decade.
It has to be said too that Perez is a dude that when he loses, he gets absolutely smoked. Like, I know Mokaev didn't, but I have my own feelings about Mokaev being a dude who fights like a good athlete but isn't a good athlete, and then is going to just struggle with good athletes the more he tries to do that.
Yeah, Mokaev survived that fight.
Yeah,
survived.
Mokaev is going to have a lot of trouble the more he fights guys that are at the athletic peak, because he goes out there and he tries to fight like he's like Yoel Romero, and he's not. Like, he's a very well-trained fighter. He is not a very super strong, athletic, fast guy. But otherwise, you know, every time Perez has had to be in there with like a really decent top tier flyweight, sometimes not even top tier flyweight, sometimes Jared Papazian, he has gotten, his losses are usually him just getting the floor mopped with him, you know?
Well, and another thing is like, his losses usually come on the ground, right? You got to be better than him on the ground.
Some club and sub stuff too. gets caught pretty hard walking in. Like,
sure, sure, but I didn't think Mateus was going to be able to hurt him on the feet. And if you weren't going to hurt him on the feet, then I assumed he needed to get the fight to the ground somehow, some way. But if he was going to try to just kickbox with Perez, I thought he was in deep shit.
I mean, what can I say? You were right. The outcome supports your theories. So,
but to your point about him ever competing for a title, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, for Nicolau, like, to me, this is a bad sign. Like, if you are getting knocked out by Alex Perez and getting smoked there, I don't know how much, like, at 31, I don't know how much there's going to be room to improve that's going to bring this around so that suddenly you're going to be in title, you know.
But title again, like I was saying, like, you don't need a good chin. That's where you fucked up
here. Well, you don't until you get up to the kind of fights that put you one fight away from a title, you know?
Yeah. It's a tall order. No, it's tough. Yeah. It's tough, man.
It is. It's tough. But
Perez reintroduced himself to the whole division, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, he's already got a loss to Alexandre Pantoja, which is unfortunate. But
it is, but it isn't, because it's history. And the division's incestuous. True. That rematches are the norm.
And if Ersig wins the belt, then he's going to need somebody to fight, you know?
Where's Amir Albazi then?
I believe he got a bad injury, didn't he?
Did he? I haven't heard his name in a long time. I almost forgot about him. I almost forgot how he didn't deserve a title shot.
Yeah. He didn't actually deserve a title shot in the first place. Yeah, he withdrew from his last bout with a neck injury.
Yikes.
That's so scary. Yeah, that is not good for him being a sudden and ready contender anytime in the near future. But, yeah, there is a sense. Are you feeling the Ersig vibe, Eddie?
I like Steve Ersig a lot. I think he presents some interesting challenges. He's huge for flyweight. He's a puncher. He's a body puncher. What's that?
He actually knows how to box. Yeah. Like, a lot of what he's lighting MMA fighters up with and talking about is just kind of putting a jab out there and cutting an angle, and these guys don't know what to do with it, you know? Right. He actually has some boxing technique.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he deals with the takedowns and the jiu-jitsu of Pantoja. That's what I'm concerned about. I have questions about. But if it stays on the feet, I think he'll knock out Pantoja.
It's never happened before, but it could. I will say this. As much as I am a Pantoja fan and have been for a long time, his reign as UFC champion, he did not look good against Royval or Moreno, honestly.
They're in the rematch, his last two?
His last two fights, those were not pretty fights. Those were not fights where Pantoja was out there looking like a clear championship caliber cut above his opposition. They were fights where it looked like he was just barely surviving against other opponents who were also barely surviving, you know?
Well, man, it gets harder to beat people over and over and over again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Time with someone fighting them, you start to figure them out and learn them. So it doesn't get easier.
No. He doesn't look like his cardio is great right now. And that is, if we're talking about flyweight being a division where cardio is king, it's not, it is hard to not feel like his title reign is going to be short, which is unfortunate to me because I love watching Pantoja fight. But anyway. I
mean, you also have to look at the strength of schedule of Ersig, which isn't there, right?
No, like, it's not there.
Off of a Matt Schnell knockout, which was fantastic, and I'm stoked for it, and I like
it. But you want to talk about flyweights who don't have chins.
Yeah, right. right. So it's an interesting matchup. It's fun. There's just so many question marks around Ersig. That's the only thing. And we don't know. We don't know how he does against the
top. If people are picking Ersig, and I might be, I haven't gotten into actually scouting it and looking at it and all that yet, really. But I think, honestly, no matter what I come out picking, like, if I'm anybody picking Arce is really doing it mostly on a vibes read, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure. The recency bias. Like, you saw what he did to Chanel. Yeah. Epic.
And then I watched gorgeous. Pantoja against Brandon Royval, where he just, like, took him down and laid on top of him for five rounds and looked like he was... struggling underwater.
That fight was he went so hard trying to submit him in the first round, like he submitted him in the first fight, that he petered himself out.
Sure, but if a flyweight can get tired, you know, we never saw Demetrius Johnson have a fight where you're like, oh man, he's fighting on fumes.
That's apples and oranges, as far as I'm concerned. You're talking about a goat.
I know, but that's
what you're talking about. Yeah, that's not fair.
No, that's you know, fighters gotta they have to be faced by
Demetrius Johnson is not the gold standard. He is an exception, an outlier, right? He is way up here. We got to drop down if we're going to be comparing him to.
But I mean that's just a way of saying he's not that good.
To Pantoja?
Yeah, well, if you're going to start saying like, oh, you can't compare him to somebody really good.
No, not really good. I said the greatest. You're comparing him to the one outlier in the division is unfair. And, like, the dude is lapping the division. Pantoja is.
Yeah, I know. But this is, I think, I'm agreeing with Dev Goes Fishing here, which is really just Pantoja does not have a champion's game.
That's fair. But he has the heart of a champion, and he finds ways to win.
Sure. But, you know.
And he can make mid-fight adjustments.
A lot of people've got the heart of a champion. Clay Guida has the heart of a champion. Doesn't have the game of a champion or the physicality of a champion.
Yes, Zane, you're right.
Okay. Let's go to the co-main event, light heavyweight bout. Bogdan Gushkov, Ryan Spahn.
You said Anthony Smith weird again.
I know. But, man... this is kind of frustrating because, like, Ryan Spahn got Gushkov to the mat so easily in that first round, and then he just went out there and is doing that thing that Ryan Spahn does where he gets right inside punching range with somebody. And he's suddenly struck by the indecision of, do I throw punches? Do I shoot takedowns? Or do I just stand here and watch what's happening and think about life and the universe and doing my taxes? Because it's already past April 15th. And, you know, it's past time. And
he definitely gets overwhelmed, it seems.
Yeah. Right?
It's like a paralysis by analysis, but it doesn't take much to get him to start analyzing.
It really doesn't. And Gushkov, like, his light heavyweight, his MMA game is like a cheap Roy Jones Jr. impersonation, but
very cheap.
Very cheap. Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm being nice. I'm still being nice, Eddie.
Yeah.
But he is big, and he does hit hard.
He's not that big. He came in like at 204 for this.
Well, okay, he's not like short.
He's lean for the division.
He's lean for the division, but how tall is he?
He looked like the same height as Spahn.
Yeah, and Spahn is 6'5". Spahn is. He's big. Oh,
really? I didn't think he was that tall. What did this happen?
Oh, he's huge. Gushkov is 6'3". So he's still...
Okay.
He's fast. He's powerful. He's big. And that is really like the essence of what makes light heavyweight work. You don't have to be well-rounded. You don't have to be durable. It's like flyweight. You don't have to be durable until you really have to be durable. You know, until it's Yuri Prochazka and Alexander Rakic, and you're finding out, like, okay, both these dudes hit extremely hard. Having a chin
indecisive.
You can't be indecisive. You have to, because everybody hits so hard and is so fast in that division. Like, good,
right.
Good
so game in that division, you really have to have that automatic athleticism.
Yeah.
Where you're not sitting there fucking contemplating your next chess move. You're just reacting physically in the best possible way. Like, an Alex Pereira is like a perfect example. You know, he's being, but obviously a world-class kickboxer.
Yeah.
But that's what you need in these
games. And Spann got out there. He had a dominant, like, he had a clear roadmap to how to, you know, push Guskov against the fence, drag him to the mat, like, make him have to wrestle you in a bunch of ways. And he just started to freeze up in that second round, and Guskov isn't going to...
Whoa! Okay, we need to change Ryan Spann's nickname. What is it, Super?
Yeah.
Is it Superman or Super?
It is Superman.
Well, we should change it to Attention. Ryan Attention Spann, because that's
where God.
He's from out here. I'm not
you
even
do.
He legit seems like he loses focus, and he does not pay attention. I hate to say it, but...
Yeah. Because you can't, you know, Guskov's game might be limited, but you can't stand in front of him and just see what happens. He will knock you out. He has absolutely got the power to do that. And now suddenly he's going to do what we've seen so many light heavyweights do before him. He's right now he's in prime Volkan Oezdemir position to win like four fights, get a title shot, and then immediately lose four fights and stay in the like borderline 10 to 15 level rankings of the light heavyweight division for the next 5 years.
Yeah, well, he already got a title shot against John Jones that he could have won by disqualification and elected not to. So there's that.
That's right.
It's never going to get old, by the way.
It's never going to get
parallels.
Old. It's never going to get old. Let's take a look at the UFC rankings. Now, suddenly, Ryan Spann was ranked, number 11. So Guskov will probably be in the top 15. And
He's only fought ranked guys up until this point. Or no, wait, I forgot about Zach Pauga.
Yeah, yeah.
He debuted against Ozdemir.
Let's see, Azamat Mirzakhanov. Unfortunately, he had pneumonia last fight. I know he had. I thought he had a knee injury or something, but he got pneumonia. That's a fight I'd like to see. It's the only one available right now. But otherwise, Alonzo Menafield is fighting Carlos Olberg. Winner of that, Bogdan Guskov. Do it.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
Yeah, because there's also Dominic Reyes, Dustin Jacoby. But the last thing I want to see is Dominic Reyes end up in a fight with Bogdan Guskov.
I can't even believe he's fighting still.
Yeah, me either.
Man, talk about like making it to the title shot and then just.
Of course, we forgot the obvious.
The mirror match.
Yeah. Guskov versus. The only problem there would be that the corners would forget which guy they're supposed to be talking to.
Corners? What about the fucking judges? How are they going to.
That's right.
That?
Yeah. Judges, corners. Like, that's a terrible idea. No rounds going to get scored properly. Fighter's going to go get called back to the wrong corner. Ref is going to... Anthony Smith is going to get kneed in the balls, and the ref is going to give Guskov like 5 minutes worth of time.
No, we're going to have Chris Tyone as the referee, and we're not going to know who the fuck's fighting, who's ref, and who's officiating. It's going to be... It's going to be a bunch of thumbs. It's going to look like hands out there. What are these hands doing fight?
Brought to you by Tommy Toehold, folks.
That's right.
I'm
glad he won, though. It's fun.
It is. It is much more fun than seeing Ryan Spann fight more light heavyweights, I'll admit. I have watched the Ryan Spann experiment play out. It was fine, but we're done. I'm done with that experiment. All right. That brings us to a women's flyweight bout. Karini Silva, Ariane Lipsky, and I am feeling very validated by my Ariane Lipsky pick. I'm not going to argue that she absolutely should have won. It was, I thought each woman won a round, and then round three was just bad. So I don't care what you score it. But
yeah,
I do feel justified for picking Ariane Lipsky, and for my continued feeling like Karine Silva's game just is not. She's a great opportunist and a crafty fighter when she sees a moment to like grab someone and trip them. When she sees somebody, an opportunity to make something happen, she makes it happen. Any actual functional fighting in space where she just has to spend time doing a thing, her game just is not good at all.
No, her saving grace is her physicality and athleticism. Yeah. And I think that's what won her the fight here. I think if Lipsky could have kept up, was just one notch higher with her physicality, she could have won this. But I think she got out-muscled in several positions that resulted in her getting stuck on the bottom. Yeah. And I think that's why she lost the fight.
Yeah, it's fine. Like round three, she landed a few good clinch knees. Thought she landed the better strikes. She got taken down and held down a bit. It's whatever. Like, you're not, I'm not going to really try to split hairs over.
The fight sounds as good as I thought it was going to be, though. I really thought this was going to be a banger. I really did.
Karine Silva's game is just funk, though. It's just weird, you know? It's a weird style. Maybe it'll get her to a title shot. A lot of people seem to think so. But I'm still every step of the way. I'm just like, I don't like this. This doesn't make any sense to me, you know?
That's fair.
No, nobody fights like this long term and has it work. But let me see. That said, she is going to be in line for some kind of step up. She's Lipsky was ranked 12, so could do Tracy Cortez, Natalia Silva, an all Silva fight.
This was a De Silva Silva fight.
I know. Lipsky, apparently she dropped the Queen of Violence thing. Apparently she's finding religion is what I'm hearing through the grapevine and deciding that, you know, she
Scientology
wants...
or what, do you know?
I don't know. I mean, it's Brazil, so I'm going to assume not Scientology and probably just Christianity. But, yeah, she's switching up her moniker, and yeah, you know, okay, whatever. Silva versus Silva. We'll keep the train going. Do Natalia Silva versus Karine Silva next.
Yeah, I'm with it.
All right, that brings us to a heavyweight bout. Janata Diniz, Austin Lane, and Hallelujah Diniz, because the absolute last thing I wanted to come out of this card in the world would be Austin Lane realizing that he can win heavyweight fights by out-wrestling heavyweights. That sounds like no fun at all in the entire world. And I am very pleased that after getting stuck on his back for a whole round, Diniz just was like, hey, I don't have to let that happen again. And just started clubbing Lane until he got it.
Anytime technique perseveres in the heavier divisions, I'm going to have a special place in my heart for it.
Yeah.
And that's what this was. This is the more technical fighter, the better fighter on paper won. And that's what it should be. Like, that's how things should be. You didn't miss much.
Yeah, no, Brandon. You really didn't. Yeah, that's what we're kind of at this point talking about.
You missed the hard reminder why Apex shows suck.
Yes. Yes. Just a poorly booked card that played out like a poorly booked card, and where even a lot of the finishes felt like a grateful end to what was looking like a terrible fight.
You know? Even the main event. The main event was a little, that opening round, like 2 minutes of nothingness before a flurry happened. So it was kind of dancing with that. Good thing Perez just stepped on the gas.
Yeah. But, and then Diniz also, he seems like he came out afterward with this whole, like, a bubbly Amanda Hibush personality, and I'm always a fan when a gigantic 6'4", 270-pound man is just like giggling about how happy he is to win in the UFC. So good for him.
Maybe he'll go the Poatan route.
Probably not.
not with that takedown defense.
No, not with that takedown defense.
He needs a heavyweight Glover Teixeira.
Also, you know, Poatan is like, he's insulated by being a gigantic armed scarecrow. Diniz is, he is a short armed puncher by heavyweight standards.
Sure. He can still do it, though.
He could. Heavyweight is not a division built on technique. So having a little, it can take you a long way. That brings us...
Yeah, we'll get to that Dontell Mays fight later.
Yeah, my God. All right, that brings us to my other grateful in a sea of suck, a moment of thanks fight of the night. David Onama beating Jonathan Pierce. And just... Pierce once again paying for being an absolute fun vampire. Y'all watched What We Do in the Shadows? And okay, Eddie didn't.
I don't watch TV, Zane.
I don't watch TV either, but I made an exception because the movie was fun. And I know you didn't watch the movie either, but I don't care. You've been lost at sea for 5 years. That's all. But one of the characters is an emotional vampire who just drains the life out of people through really boring conversation. And Jonathan Pierce is that guy as a fighter, where he's just out there draining the life out of opponents with the most clingy, boring, unfun style in the world. And the fact that he tried to steal this fight with a little bit of like, wavy arm punch point to the Max Holloway thing. It's just like, you didn't even land any of those punches. Thank God that the judges did not get fooled by that.
You know who else didn't get fooled by this matchup? Motherfucking me, because I picked Onama.
Me too.
You picked Onama here?
Wait, No, I didn't.
Yeah, no. I'm about to say, I don't think you did, Zane.
I didn't.
No time. Capping on live TV. What are you doing here?
I thought I did, but no, I remember now that I picked the least fun route.
I actually picked Pierce. However,
speaking of lying on live TV,
I went up into our chat and was like, I'm switching my pick. The guy fighting Pierce didn't make weight, is going to be heavy and harder to hold down. I'm going to take him. And he could possibly knock this guy out. Yeah.
It was just a fun suck fight.
It's a frustrating fight. Like, if you have any kind of respect for positional control, you're going to hate this.
Yeah.
Especially what Onama was doing. He would like escape these horrible positions just and then to give stay them attached up. And just,
yeah.
Oh, so frustrating.
Just all the white belt grappling in the world. Well, blue belt. Let's be a little fair. Like,
and it's weird because Pierce is a great grappler, so it's like the pounds that were needed.
He doesn't have any attack. That's the problem. Is it, even if you're a decent grappler, if you don't actually use those positions to attack anything, you're just like, oh, I got here, I'm going to hold on to it. People at this level are going to find ways to fight out of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, what you're doing is you're letting people hang around.
Exactly.
And that's the worst thing.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to see it not pay off.
Yeah.
You know?
The wet blanket style sucks.
It does. So really glad Onama got that win. Dismal fight. Eddie, I assume you're going to be watching
Mike Perry. Oh, I got the screen. I'm watching
Nothing Before
right now. Absolutely.
Yeah, I will be off eating dinner with my wife and other things.
Lost at sea.
Yes, I'm lost at sea. All right. That brings us to a welterweight bout. Uros Medic, Tim Means. And this was... I picked Medic. I assume you picked Medic. Mm-hmm. This was, but that was a sadness hedge of just like.
I think it was just a realist kind
yeah,
of understanding.
I get no joy. It was the thing is like Tim Means has only been KO'd once in his whole career in 2019, but he's been getting hurt a lot lately, and this just felt like the next time, and it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just fine.
Manage is yeah, a killer. He's the killer he killed guy, and he's fun, but he's going through some shit. His post fight speech was a yeah, little concerning.
Yeah, he was very much like, yeah, you know, I'm happy to get the win, but I've got a lot of stuff going on. It was very much yeah, just
like he was not interested in all at the fact that he just knocked out Tim Means with a bodacious uppercut.
Yeah.
Like, bro, you just fucking uppercutted this dude and you just act like your dog died. Are you okay?
Yeah. All right. That brings us to a
Tim Elliott vibes.
Yeah. Well, he has spent a lot of time living in Alaska and, you know, as somebody else who spent a lot of time living in Alaska, that can do things to a man. All right. That brings us to a bantamweight bout, Victor Henry, Hani Yahya. And for a minute, this was kind of a concern. Hani Yahya came out and he tried to put the pace on Victor Henry early in this fight. But then Henry buckled down and realized that as long as he pushed forward and didn't try to fight off the back foot against Hani Yahya, that there was literally nothing in the world that Hani Yahya could do about it.
And Yahya is one of these people who has a very finite gas tank.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the further the fight goes on, the more the fight resembles elder abuse.
Yes, especially with that haircut. My yeah, God, man, he walked halfway out through from getting sheared. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. It's like he got caught between the age of 40 and 50. There's a mullet reference in there or something.
No, that was
midlife crisis in the front.
Yeah.
Past your prime in the back. I don't know. But he's yeah, out fighting and he needs to shave his fucking head.
Yes. Just look, don't I know that Eddie and I can both not offer zero empathy at all as men who still have gloriously full heads of hair. But if you get to that point, just shave it. Just
you got like he's got the horseshoe. You
know, exactly.
It's the like horseshoe, a horseshoe missing part.
Like he left the clown tuft in the front where you see the clown's got like the spikes. You know?
It's like he's got like a landing strip.
Yeah.
He's gotta stop. It's almost like the Chuck Liddell. But the back is full.
Yeah, it's terrible. I don't know.
I didn't feel good. I didn't feel good about that at all. Nothing about that makes me feel good. He's got to stop.
Yeah. All right. That brings us to a lightweight bout, Austin Hubbard, Michael Figlock. And it was a fight. I saw people complaining about this.
What, the robbery?
It is. Can you call a robbery where both guys sit down and land the same 1-2 combination over and over for 3 rounds at the exact same pace a robbery? I mean, I realize Figlock may have landed the cleaner punches, but like these two, this is exactly what a simmer of a fight is that can never get over to a boil where both guys are just.
Well, yeah, it's because they were out of sync.
Yeah.
They never got each other's timing. They were always just kind of zigging and zagging in a weird way.
Yeah.
They just never hit a rhythm.
No.
Neither one of them could hit a rhythm. But no. I thought it was a decent fight. It was oddly competitive.
It was competitive. It was close. It was just the same. Like, what you could take 1 minute from this fight and just play it over and over again on loop for 15 minutes, and you would have watched the whole fight.
Yeah. I definitely don't think Hubbard won.
Yeah, I think I actually just slipped into a coma at that point, so I didn't. I don't know that I actually scored it.
Yeah, I gave all 3 to Figlock actually.
Let me see. Let me see what if I actually.
The second was definitely close. And I thought Figlak clearly won the third.
Let me see if I have. I've memory holed this fight, so.
Well, it's understandable.
I scored it 29-28 Figlak. I thought he landed the cleaner shots in at least two rounds.
Yeah, that sounds correct.
Yeah. So I'm not gonna argue with your robbery take. I also just am never gonna care or think about this fight ever again.
Yeah, not the best. Still funly competitive, also.
Sure, fine. It's fine. All right. That brings us to a real shit show. Dontell Mays, Kyle Machado, and this fight felt like these two guys felt that touching another man made them kind of and didn't want to. And so they were trying to keep as much space between them while landing the most awkward, I don't want to be here punches imaginable for three rounds. And that's the fight we got out of it.
It was a weird fight. It was a very low level heavyweight fight.
It was. It was all kickboxing from two guys that absolutely do not know how to kickbox.
At least we got a knockdown.
Yes, we did get a knockdown
in the opening round. That was cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, tough to watch. Tough, like, just not UFC level, right? And I wouldn't be surprised if Machado could go down to 205.
Probably. I would be surprised that I would be surprised if he could win at 205. Like, he's not fast or powerful, so he's just maybe the right size.
Dontell Mays reminds me of John Jones if he got stung by a bee.
It is really impressive to see a fighter get more out of shape over their UFC career. Like, how do you have more of a spare tire for this fight than any time before in the past?
Heavyweight will always be an anomaly.
Yes, it is just a weird place for weird dudes. All right. That brings us to a women's strawweight bout, Ketlyn Souza, Marnik Mann. This should have been a 30-24 for Ketlyn Souza.
Wrong.
This should have been a 30-24 for Ketlyn Souza. The fact that it was not a 30-24 for Ketlyn Souza is a testament to how terrible she is at controlling a fight. Because Marnik Mann is terrible.
This should have been a TKO stoppage. This should have been a standing TKO stoppage is what it should have been.
Yes.
Mann was just getting rocked up against the cage with zero defense at all, the fight should have been stopped.
It was a completely one-sided ass beating that was made not an ass beating because every now and then Ketlyn Souza would walk in, get clinched up, and let herself get thrown on her face and then have to fight her way out of it and go back to beating Marnik Mann's ass. Like, what are you doing letting this person control you at all? Have a second of success. They hate getting punched. They don't know how to react to it. They cover and shell up every single time. All you have to do is just throw a couple punches, let them get hurt, take a step back, go back in, throw two or three punches, take a step back, take a step forward. You make
it sound so easy, Zane.
I mean, I am nobody to tell anybody really how to fight, but it is.
Marnik Mann could have been a finish.
Marnik Mann is one of the least technically skilled, the least gifted fighters UFC's ever signed. And Ketlyn Souza needs to take a hard look at her coaches, need to take a hard look in the mirror at their fighter here.
Yeah, this is one of the worst performances I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Out of someone who didn't get finished.
Yeah. That brings us to a catchweight 156 pound bout, Chris Padilla versus James Lontop. And I knew Lontop was not athletic. I did not realize he was so unathletic that he would lose to Chris Padilla. Because
I'm not sure if this was an athletic thing as much as just poor grappling.
No. James Lontop looks like he is dragging cement blocks every time he moves his legs. And his kicking is some of the most awkward, least coordinated kicking I've ever seen. And he made Chris Padilla's back take transition look like Damian Maya out there. Like, made his opponent look like they were operating at lightning speed. He's just so slow.
It's not the speed, I'm telling you. It's the technique. Like, the man's turned his back with his neck up. Like
that too. Like, but it's also the speed. It's
that situational awareness.
Yeah. The bottom of this card was not anything close to typical, even watered down, typical UFC level competition. The bottom few fights on this card were really like they would not be on the main card of a Cage Fury Fighting Championships card. They would be unaired prelims.
Right. Dark limbs. Post limbs.
Yeah. Bellator post limbs were the bottom few fights on this card.
Yeah. But shout out to Padilla stepping in on short notice.
Yeah.
Right.
He got in
underweight. Okay. And fought someone who missed weight. Biggest betting underdog on the card. Cashed in with the first round.
He is a dude that you look at his record, you watch his fights. Chris Padilla was never meant to be in the UFC. So he sees the opportunity and he now has a UFC win. And you know what? More power to him. You can't take that away from him.
I don't have a UFC win.
No. I will never have a UFC win. I will never even come close to sniffing a UFC win. So
it was way to show up, man. He did what he had to do. And I love the way he was mixing everything together. It's not like he was just spamming takedowns. Like, he was willing to throw down and chuck some leather to get to his positions.
Yeah, credit to him. All right, that brings us to a women's flyweight bout. Ivana Petrovic. Petrovic against Liang Na, and kind of like the Padilla-Lontop fight. Just really remarkable how unathletic Liang Na is, because anytime this was standing, or really anytime she had energy, she was beating Petrovic's ass. Just complete one-way traffic.
It's the Herbert Burns syndrome.
Yeah.
She's so unathletic that she has to sprint just to maintain.
Exactly. Just to fight at a normal athlete, she is burning so much energy that even beating Petrovic's ass, she just got really tired. Yeah. And that was it.
And she got caught in a Rutolo teen.
Yeah.
Did you see that? That's gangster.
Yeah.
The arm in rear naked choke. They called it an arm triangle, but it was on the back.
Yeah. So, congrats to Petrovic. Your game is also really underdeveloped and bad, but you found somebody in the UFC unathletic enough that even while beating your ass, they got tired. So,
it definitely is not going to get easier for her.
No. This was the gift, honestly.
And even then, it was a little dicey.
Oh yeah, no, she was getting dialed up. But Liang Na was out there looking like, you know, fucking Edson Barboza, like
short gas tank Barboza.
Yeah. All right, that brings us to a lightweight bout: Mahashate against Gabriel Benitez, and I guess. I don't know.
What's wrong?
I mean, I don't know that Mahashate won this fight.
Really?
Yeah. I thought a lot of Benitez's kicking game and the punches he was snapping Mahashate's head back with were more notable than the counters Mahashate was landing. They were fine. It was fine. I'm not going to argue it. I feel
like anytime Benitez started to gain a little bit of momentum, Mahashate would take it right back.
Fair enough.
But like that's how I was seeing it. Like Mahashate would lead, Benitez would come back, and then Mahashate would reclaim the momentum. And the whole fight kind of went that way.
Yeah, I get it. Just, you know, Benitez outlanded him in every round. The low kicks, I thought, had a good effect. I don't know.
These guys were out of sync also.
Yeah, it was a lot like that Hubbard-Figlock fight where it was just kind of, you watch a minute of it and you're kind of watching the whole fight the whole time through. So
a lot of glancing blows.
Yeah.
A lot of almost wow moments.
I'm glad Mahashate won because he hasn't done it for a while, but he would occasionally come through and troll me on Twitter for not picking him in fights.
I love that.
Yeah.
Of all people.
Right? But so I'm glad he won. I picked him to win, but I will say that coming out of this, I was kind of like, yeah, did you though? I guess, you know.
He wasn't dominant.
No, you squeaked by a very rote kickboxer who seems like he's really at the tail end of his career.
They were both pretty rote out there, honestly.
Yeah.
I didn't see a lot of... Nobody was trying varying from the basic stuff at all.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, set the tone for a night of just like...
Yeah. Let down.
Real struggle hours for the UFC.
You can't come off a UFC 300 and go back to the apex where you got people missing weight again, right? This is now 6 missed weight cuts across 2 UFC apex cards. What's going on at the apex?
It is starting to get that Bellator vibe where like every Bellator card, they'd be like, 8 guys that miss weight because they're making like $500 and they've been rounded up from the regional bars to like sell their own tickets and shit. I'm starting to get a little of that vibe here with these Apex.
Weird going on with the Apex.
This card was definitely the bottom of this card was some real basement level UFC.
Did you see that? Those betting odds floating around for the weigh-ins.
Yeah, that was,
they didn't last very long.
They
came out, and like the moment they were posted, they were deleted.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's up with that.
That's some book. Somebody, some odds maker at the bookie's office was like, oh, I got a really great idea. And they did that, and their boss turned around and looked at it for a moment. Right. And they're like,
No terrible. One looked at it until a bet was placed, I bet you.
Yeah, somebody bet like somebody was suddenly betting like $5,000 under the name, you know, David Onima bets $5,000 that David Onama is gonna miss weight.
David No Mama.
Yeah, David No Mama.
David No Mama out there cashed in big time on that prop. Yeah,
dumbest prop.
Tapion also cashed in.
Yeah,
I didn't forget against Padilla.
All right. On that note, for our Substack subscribers, we'll have a little bit of bonus content coming at you here in just a moment.
To access the bonus content of this episode, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to themmadrawpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.